I also went downhill skiing. I don't know how I'm talking about that. It was...
Have you been before?
I think the last time I went, I was 15.
Okay.
So it had been many...
And are you 22 now, 23?
How did you know?
Yeah.
My God. It was hard. It was a lot of like, I'm sorry, flailing my arms going down the hill. But, you know, nothing too crazy. Didn't break any bones.
That's good.
Crash into anyone.
Fantastic.
So there you go.
Hello and welcome to Talking Too Loud with Chris Savage. I'm your host, Chris Savage. I am joined by Sylvie Lubow, our producer extraordinaire. Sylvie,
Hello.
To see you.
Great to see you too. Hi.
It's been a little bit since we recorded. It's weird.
I know. I feel weird.
Yeah.
I feel weird. I'm like, The whole show is that. The whole show.
Ooh. No words in this episode. Just like, whoa. Basically, the number of people just turn this off is very high. But if you're still with us, thanks for joining us. We've got a great episode. Today, we have Jonathan Berg, who is the SVP of Revenue at New Breed. They are an elite HubSpot solutions partner on a mission to help companies unlock meaningful growth and forge the type of customer connections that drive recurring revenue. And we actually did a short episode with Jonathan when we were at Inbound. So we asked Jonathan to come back today for a full episode. So that is coming up. But first, I know you're wondering, what's got us talking too loud? So Sylvie, what's got you talking too loud?
Let's see. I played some snow croquet this weekend.
What?
Yeah, I was up in Vermont visiting friends. The main event was a curling competition, but they were curling with giant cheese curds. And
come on,
that was a sight to behold. But my highlight was definitely playing snow croquet with brooms and kind of broken hockey sticks. Got pretty competitive, got pretty into it.
I'm not surprised that you got competitive.
You're not?
I am surprised that you're like, oh, you won't believe these brooms. Like, they're so fun.
I mean, it was something I had never experienced before, but I was like, man, if it snows in New York, I would totally do this. It was just like so goofy and
so maybe
silly.
You should start like stocking up on cheese.
I think so. That's the takeaway there.
Just get a few wheels of cheese ready at any moment.
Like do a prayer.
Yeah.
A snow prayer. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. So, you know, I just got a Vision Pro.
Classic.
And it's been very interesting. And it has been, I'm trying to understand it basically. It was like, okay, so like, will this thing actually be used? Will it be used a lot? You know, as you know, I've gotten the Oculus and we've given Oculuses to people on the team and played mini golf or whatever. And the thing that's interesting about it is like, I think it's the best screen I've ever used in the sense of like, if you want to watch a movie and you put it on this thing, you just pinch it and you make it huge and it's just like, your eyes don't get tired. And it's like, you could have a theater in your home. And that seems like kind of amazing because I think when I first saw it and heard about it, I thought maybe this is going to be that like augmented layer that you add onto your life, right? Mm-hmm. And like you see all these crazy idiots like wearing this thing on the street and like walking around with it and like at basketball
Please don't
games
be one
and
of those.
Well, the thing is, before using it, I could see how you might try that.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're like getting feeds of information all the time or
right,
something.
Right.
It's just not set up for that now. Maybe someone will figure it out. So I don't think that's going to be what happens. But I do think that for people who, you know, if you had to decide, do you want to buy like a massive TV or do you want like an incredible screen and actually like you could take it on a plane or you can use it in your office at home. You can use it in your bed. Like it's in every room with you and you can extend your computer to it. It's pretty cool. You like look at your computer and then you just like pinch a little thing and it just your monitor is massive in front of you. And it looks incredible. And so,
you're betting that people will opt to buy that instead of.
Well, I mean, have you looked at how expensive some of these monitors are? Like a high end Apple monitor is like $8,000. So this thing's like 3.5. I think there's going to be people who, instead of getting high-end monitor, get this.
Huh.
And I think then if you have it and if you find one use case for it, it's like, or if you fly a lot and you're not embarrassed, because that's the big question. It's like, you know.
Yeah. Like it's functional, but is it fashionable?
It's definitely not fashionable. I mean, remember AirPods when they first came out, everyone was like, what the hell are these things? You look like an idiot. And then, you know, eventually everyone got used to it. So I don't know. But it's like, if you could snap your fingers and this was in glasses, it would take off. But I don't think that you can. I think we might be 10 years. Is it 10 years? Is it 20? I don't know. It's really hard to predict before we get there. But I think in the near term, if it works and people buy it, it's going to be because they want bigger monitors or they want a bigger TV or they want to watch content like that. And it is pretty cool for that.
All right. Well, the jury's out.
The jury's very much out. But you know me, early adopter, got to try this stuff out. But they need to figure out, like, what do the customers actually want and how are they actually using it? If you could figure that out, find the killer use case, you're going to have something great. And, you know, it's interesting because our interview today with Jonathan, you know, talking a lot about, like, how you uncover what metrics are working. How do you figure out if you should stay on something versus changing? What are the things that people who are in charge of revenue are managing? And a lot of it comes back to, what do the customers want? And so I think this is a great interview to learn about that. So let's jump into the interview with Jonathan Berg.
Hey guys, it's me,
Frank the Ad Guy.
If you're a startup with big dreams, you need a CRM that can keep up. Luckily, there's HubSpot for Startups, a unique platform that unites your entire front office from marketing to sales to support and offers a ton of resources for navigating the ups and downs of early stage growth. Beginnings are never easy, but they sure can be easier. Visit HubSpot.com/startups to learn more. Looking to harness the power of video for your business? Whether you're hosting webinars, onboarding new customers, or creating a spiffy landing page, video is key to making an impact. And that's where Wistia comes in. With our complete video marketing platform, we help you create, host, and share videos that not only get views, they also get results. And the cherry on top? Wistia's in-depth analytics and handy email forms. They're the perfect tools for lead generation and understanding your audience. So if you're ready to level up your capital V video marketing strategy, head on over to wistia.com/TTL. That's WISTIA.com/TTL. And don't forget to follow at Wistia on social media for more tips, tricks, and video treats. And now back to the podcast.
Jonathan, so good to have you on the show. We got to connect at Inbound, which was in September, where we recorded a mini episode of Talking July with you. And now you're back for the real thing. So,
all right. Full
length. You know the drill. You know how this works. I have to start with the question, what has you talking too loud?
There's a good amount. But the thing that I've been talking most loud about recently is bagels.
Bagels.
Let's hear it.
Montreal bagels specifically. So
okay.
I don't know if y'all have you ever had a Montreal bagel?
This was literally what I talked too loud about last time. So I need to see where you're at. Yes.
No. This is pretty shocking.
This is crazy. Yes. This is eerie.
Oh boy. Things are heating up.
Bagels are heating up.
All right. So you've got Saint Viator, you got Fairmont, you got like the big debate in Montreal. Great bagels, very delicious. I actually believe there is a better Montreal bagel. All people from Montreal are like storming the border right now to Burlington, Vermont, to protest. Meyer's Bagels, delicious, delicious bagel joint in Burlington, Vermont. Check out, written up in the New York Times. Fantastic place. So long history, which you can read about. The thing that was really interesting about Meyer's Bagel is they're in a really cool location. It's kind of small seating area. Had all of the makings for like some crazy supply demand, like throw it on its head, like lines out the door, really cool, like following. And in fact, I had a mini little obsession. I would show up at like 5:30 in the morning and just like watch them make bagels. I was just fascinated with like the commitment and the artisan, like everything about it was amazing. And it like, it built the whole experience, built the brand. And, you know, you had people in the area who were just like diehard Meyers bagel fans, and they still are. So it changed ownership. Love the new crew, like really friendly, really nice, maintained the bagel itself. So the bagel is still absolutely delicious. And a lot of people have learned how to make the bagel. Prior was just like the owner made the bagel.
Who was doing everything.
No one else made the bagel. Like they were the bagel maker. So I was really nervous about that. So the bagel consistency stayed the same, but they moved into a new location. And it's a little bit big. And it's, there's TVs in it.
No.
And it's,
God, and no.
The brand is different, right? So like I had this, like there was like a vision. Like I almost like wrote a book, like a story for the future of this brand that was like became like a national like brand, but only one location. So you had like people flocking to Burlington, Vermont to like eat this special bagel. And I'm nervous. It's lost that. So talking a little bit loud about that today.
You know, it's really interesting because that's such a great example of like the impact of brand too, right? Like all those little things adding up to change the experience, which like you can argue even changes the taste. You know, like I feel like that with Coke kind of like, you know, you've seen enough advertising for Coke over the years that like Coke tastes better to me because of that, right? And in this case, it's like that feeling of someone who is an artisan doing it. It's so funny. There's a croissant place here in Providence, Rhode Island. And it's a one-man shop. It's called Butterbang. And he has so much demand that you have to pre-order. You have to get a slot at a specific time to pick up. So you have to pick up at like 10, 15. He always sells out. And he has an email list to get on the email list. So the brand is this one guy. You're just imagining him all week. All he's doing is he's getting these thousands of croissants ready himself.
Yeah.
Then he's there. Brian is his name. Selling you the croissants in person. And it feels... You eat this, so feels so special. But if he was in the wrong place with the wrong environment, and I think the TVs and all this stuff, like the brand is not going to be there. And if he, and I think it's this interesting challenge, like how do you scale a brand? How do you do it and like hold on to the right things while jettisoning the wrong things? I mean, it's such an interesting question.
It was this balance of like, teaching others how to make the bagel and how to make the customer feel special while they're, you know, having the product and they're enjoying it in that atmosphere. Because it wasn't scalable. Like the person's back hurt. Like they, you know, they had to get out of the business, right? So like all of a sudden there was like an end to that. And how do you sort of facilitate growth but maintain that specialness?
Well, look, I want to transition to your day-to-day. You know, you're the SVP of revenue at New Breed. Which, you know, is a mix of marketing, sales, and revenue strategy wrapped into one and helping people build their brand. So can you break down your new role at New Breed? And like, what does a day look like after you've had the bagel? Like, what is it? What does it look like?
Well, I don't eat a bagel every day. I'm anchored a bit on oatmeal at the moment. But yeah, so I'm I support the marketing, sales, partnerships, and revenue operations team at New Breed. And really, you know, what we're striving for is delivering as much value as we can to our community and our customers and the HubSpot community at large, right? So thinking through like, what value does the HubSpot ecosystem, so not just HubSpot itself and the different hubs, but the app partners, the other solution partners, the people within the community, what are they doing? And how can we communicate that value in a way that's best for our customers and for people who are really trying to unlock meaningful growth? So, you know, I structure my week around the different groups. Like, so, you know, part of my week, I'm really focused on supporting the sales organization and pipeline and being in front of prospects and thinking through ways that we can tailor our solutions and provide insights to prospects that are going to really help them through their decision-making process of who's the right either tech or solutions partner. Other parts of my week, I'm really thinking about thought leadership. I'm thinking about content creation. I'm thinking about like message development and how can we put the best content out in front of the community to sort of help communicate that at large? And then I've got another part of my week where it's really demand focused. So like, okay, what's conversion rate optimization look like? How can we nurture leads best into our funnel? How can we have the best type of outreach and conversations? We're not really, as you could probably imagine, we're not really big on sort of straight outbound, but more making sure that we're delivering the right type of content to people who we believe we can really help. And what do those mechanisms look like, and how can we get that done?
And which of those feels like the hardest right now? Like in, all you know, we're at the beginning of all of them, they all feel hard.
Everything. All yeah. of them feel
it's
hard.
It's all hard.
Okay. You know, I think the reason why it all feels hard is because like the rate of change and the demands on marketing, sales, revenue, RevOps leaders is like so fast. And we need to stay ahead of it in all different facets. So not only do we need to keep evolving and testing and finding out like what are the best solutions, what are the best combinations of solutions, what are best practices, we need to then train and enable our teams to then be able to train and enable our prospects and our customers in the best way. So I think that's why my answer is all. Right now, currently though, like driving higher levels of organic traffic and conversions in sort of this new AI era is just a challenge for everybody, right? It's not, I don't think it's isolated to one organization. It's changing rapidly, and organizations really need to focus on different means to get people to their first party properties and drive the right conversions that are going to help grow business.
Yeah, it's very unpredictable, right? It's just, it's predictable that there's going to be a lot of change. And it's like, at what scale of the change? Like, and, you know, there's so, I mean, I've known you for a while, but like, I've never seen the pace like it is right now, where it's like, new thing, everything different. Okay, is this going to change everything? I don't know, you have to make a call pretty quick if it is, and then move on to the next technology and the next and the next and the next. It's like a, it's very, very different. You know, COVID at least was like, when it happened, it was known mm-hmm. within like a few weeks. It's like, well, everyone's who can work remotely is working remotely. All right. So that's like basically new normal, very rapid. And this doesn't feel like that. This doesn't feel like, oh, we're a month into ChatGPT up and then Perplexity and then up and then this Google change and then up. And then it's very confusing. And it's you know, what's interesting is like, and I'd like your take on this. I keep thinking it's like, what are the behaviors? What are the human behaviors that are going to dictate where we're going to end up? You know, so like, for example, most people are just used to going to Google. So there may be a better solution, but it's hard to reprogram and change that behavior. So for a long time after there's a better solution, people will still be going to Google. You know, like another example is like everyone just getting tired of trying new things. It's so tiring. There's so many new things. And so therefore, like we can see new things that are really amazing, but a very small number of people are actually going to see them and use them and try them in earnest and all of that because this is changing. So how do you think about figuring out where this stuff is going to land?
I think it all comes down to your customer, right? You got to talk to your customer. You got to understand your customer base because each different industry and each different type of buyer, their behaviors are changing at different pace.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to sort of sell solutions and support and help digital marketers, right, the way that they buy and the channels that they go to learn are going to be different than selling to CFOs, which is different than selling to CIOs. So their behaviors are just different, right? Like a CIO of an enterprise organization is going to call up their analysts that they trust and say, hey, we're looking to invest in these types of solutions. They might not even think about going to Google to run a search for it, right? A small business owner who's looking for ways to reduce, I don't know, printing costs of flyers that they use for their local marketing is going to go search for that quite differently. So I think it always comes down to like, you've got to know your customer, and then you've got to think through like, what are their current channels? And then how are those going to evolve? Study those channels. Study how those are evolving. A really great example is marketplace behavior. So we know that people trust their peers. They trust their colleagues. So two things. build a community. And I don't mean like build a platform where people log in and talk to each other, right? You need to cultivate people learning from each other. Bring the voice of your customer into all of your marketing materials. Make sure that you're showing the value that people get from maybe not even just using your solution, but partnering with you from a thought leadership, from a learning, right? Build that community. And then think about the marketplaces that people are having conversations in. And really lean into those pretty hard. Now, there's certain ones that are just noise, but there's other ones that you may not even know about. There's Slack groups, right? There's a lot of different types of communities that people engage in. So I think that's going to be one of the big areas that we've been talking about a lot, but it's going to be critical as there's a lot of changes. You know, when I think about sort of like how AI and other technologies are sort of changing things, my hope is that it actually brings people closer together and it allows for more community and more conversations to help people solve problems together.
And what, when you're going through this change, what numbers do you think should stay the same? Like what numbers should people continue to measure, focus on to try to drive decision-making? And what do you think they should be willing to jettison?
As a revenue leader, pipeline is absolutely critical. Consistent sort of opportunity creation and really being focused on that opportunity number. In the state of HubSpot research, which is still extremely relevant, we're already embarking on the next round, but in that research, it showed that people just don't trust MQL data, right? It's like the MQL is dead. I'm a big believer it's the way you define it. Like what is an MQL, right? So like if you're defining it in an area that's aligned with everybody in your organization that shows that it's meaningful, it's really important. For me, if there's quality conversations or they're engaging with your product in a quality way around features that you know are really important that drive to a sale, and then pipeline is absolutely critical, right? That's got to drive a lot of decision-making. And pipeline might mean something different for different types of organizations. So somebody within more of a higher volume, PLG, B2C motion, where conversions happen really fast. What is that pipeline for you and what does that look like? I think those are the things that you've got to maintain consistency against. I think some of the earlier stage, sort of the leading indicators, those are going to shift. They're going to shift with purchasing behavior, with traffic behavior, from based on what we're seeing right now in the market and what we've seen before.
Can you also go a layer deeper just on that report and talk about like what are some of the other challenges that revenue leaders are focusing on right now and need to be focused on, and how should they think about combating them?
Yeah, so prioritization was the number one challenge cited by revenue leaders. So like, where should we be investing at the moment, right? Like, there's so much that we could be investing in, and finding those right investments is absolutely critical. The other was creating alignment between marketing, sales, customer success, and the rest of the organization. So we just wrapped up our 24 planning process. And I think the most important thing that we did and we really invested in was creating radical alignment through that process. So it wasn't planning in silos and then coming together and being like telling each other what our plans were. It was like, yeah, we took a very integrated approach that every single number, every single conversion point, every single retention metric was aligned, and we had a unified organizational wide plan around how to get that done. So I think alignment is absolutely critical. How to integrate AI and new technology into your operations. Now people just don't know, right? And everybody's being told you have to do it. So how do you do it in an effective way that actually is going to make an impact? I think many organizations have bigger goals with fewer resources. I think we're all feeling it right now. It's like, oh, it's January of a new year. Everybody's goals go up 20% just because it's January 1st of a new year, right? Like we often tell ourselves that. So how do we do that, but do it in a really efficient and profitable way with less resources? And yeah, then the last one was finding and retaining talent, and really good talent that's going to help with sort of the current state in the future.
And so a lot of that is like, how do you focus, right? Like how do you focus on the right problems to solve and mm-hmm. get the teams focused together, right? Versus like people spinning out in different directions saying like, we're going to concentrate our effort maybe
Yep.
Where we're all thinking about the same thing, right? Versus like different teams all, to your point, coming up with different plans.
Yeah. And I think that's like the prioritization thing, right? And I come back to the customer. I come back to the customer, like, how do you focus? If you're really aligned with your customer and like, hey, these are the pains that our customer is feeling and here's the value that we deliver, I think it helps create a lot of focus for you. It drives your strategic direction and your initiatives. I think the other thing is over communicating. I find a lot of times with focus, senior leaders and executive leaders will like, they'll be like, oh yeah, we're really focused. We know exactly what we're doing. And then you go down a couple of layers in the organization and people are like, we have no idea what's going on. Like, I don't even like, are we supposed to do this or this? So that over communication is so key. It's absolutely critical. It's probably like, I think for revenue leaders, it might be one of the most overlooked behaviors and activities of revenue leaders is internal communication that genuinely impacts revenue.
Yeah, it's funny you say, because I think a lot about that too, and that like we structure, for example, like our all hands meetings at Wistia once a month, and we go through what our goals are. We go through how we're doing on each major goal. Mm-hmm. You see the same thing, the strategy and the vision every time. And so it's boring. But it's designed to be
perfect. It's perfect.
The idea is you've seen it so many times, because lots of times you have to see something many times to become familiar with it, to have it like sink in and mean something. And I think it's true with customers too, right? Like, you know, we don't live in a world where it's one touch and they're done anymore, right? Like it's like all the research says, everybody does more research before they buy, and however many, 50 points of contact, whatever the average number is. And so staying on message and actually committing and over and over and over, because it sounds, I don't know, I think sometimes people get confused, to your point, where it's like, hey, we did a launch, everyone knows about this thing. It's like, they don't know. That's literally the first time they've ever heard it, and they have to see it over and over and over. And once they see enough times, they're like, oh, I think I know what that product is, or I think I know what it does. And then maybe if you're lucky, you have something really different or new that you're doing, and that stands out even more. But a lot of times it's like, to your point, and I love your pushback on just focus on the customer. Like, that is always the answer, which is interesting, because it's so easy to not do that, actually, right? It's so easy to look at some other company and the way they're doing things. I'm like, oh, we should just do it like them. Looks like it's working. It's like, you don't know if it's working. Yeah, you don't know if it's working for them. You don't know why they're doing it. And I think it spins a lot of folks out, especially as we all look for advice or people watch this podcast. It's like, you know, we're not telling you do everything exactly the way we're saying it. Like, your job is to like hopefully pull out the parts that actually might align with what you're doing, or maybe inspire a different way of thinking. But it's, if you're just looking for hacks, it just doesn't work.
No, hacks don't work. Consistency is absolutely key, you know. Like a lot of organizations sort of like, all right, we ran this campaign, and they'll be like, we sent an email. They're like, all right, now we need to run a different campaign, and it's another email on a different topic.
Yeah.
And the way that I like to think about our campaigns and advise people in this fashion is like, think through the challenges and the messaging frameworks around how you're going to communicate with a specific segment of your customer base. And that should potentially last for 1-2. I've run a campaign for over 4 years in my career, and it delivered exceptional. Now within each quarter and within the programs, you can be really creative within it, right? You could bring that messaging and that campaign to life in different ways, but the consistency is so key to really sort of drive that brand awareness and that understanding.
It's funny, because when you said, I feel like you said this earlier, it's January, so we need to increase the numbers 20%. I think a lot of people are like, oh, annual planning, what's the new thing we have to do? And sometimes the best thing you could possibly do is do the exact same thing
you're still doing.
Just make it better. And what we're talking about is basically like, okay, work on a hard problem for a long time and just make constant improvement. Doesn't sound very sexy. You know, it's like, I wish there was like, I'll just do this one weird hack and then it's going to work. But it's like, but this is the thing, right? It's like you do this and it adds up. And I mean, the dream is to find a campaign that's the same campaign that works for 4 years. That's a delight. That would be incredible, right?
Yeah, but after like 3 months, like if something genuinely isn't working, you got to be real about it and be like, okay, like we need to pivot. We need to sort of figure out what that's about. So
great, great point. So like, how do people know? Because I always love zeroing on this moment, because I've made this mistake in my career where we've had something and we pivoted too fast away because we thought it wasn't working. Or we've had things where we had crazy expectations. Like, we're expecting to 10x this number next year because we had no attention on it before. Now there's attention. It's going to work. And then we go through the year and we 4x it. But because we tried to 10x it, we thought we failed. And so our own perception screwed us up and it distracted us. And yeah, it's just been something that I think a lot about, because I think when you're doing new things, how do you really know if you should give up or if you should stick with it? And I'm always interested to hear how people think about this, because it's hard to know.
Yeah, it's really hard to know. And there's got to be so many different ways to cut this. One is, you really got to understand like the duration and how your customers buy. So if you've got a good understanding that like, hey, we know pretty well that it takes 2 weeks for our customers to sort of come into our funnel, make a decision and convert, or 3 months or 6 months or a year, right? So like, have an understanding of what that looks like. I think it's also really important to have a good understanding of like, what are your average conversion rates across your different funnel? And then based on those averages, set an appropriate goal. It might actually be lower if something really new to market, and your goal might be something like, we want to have this many conversations. That's it, because we're going to learn, right? We just want to learn in this phase, right? So sort of set an appropriate goal associated with the phase of what it is that you're doing. If you're in a mature market, right, that sort of goal set is going to be different than you're creating a whole new category. Set those goals really clearly and then measure against those, because it's going to be different for every single company. And if you're really deliberate about what that looks like, then you can sort of take a step back, and then your spidey senses come in as somebody who hopefully is intimate with the organization, intimate with the competitive landscape, and you can get a right sense. But you've got to start with an understanding of sort of, what does your business look like? What are you trying to accomplish? And then measure against that. Sort of combines the science and the art of that decision-making process. So that's sort of how I've approached any sort of campaign or market entry or testing out new segments in the past.
Or have there been times when you're doing that and you're like, you know, the qualitative disagrees with the quantitative?
Yeah. yeah.
That seems like a tough spot to be in.
It is. That's why it's like, it's hard. I find, because I agree with you 100%, like the setting the goals and the, setting it aligned to the market. When you're talking about that, I think that's what people can screw up too, is like, you have a new thing, so you expect modest growth, but actually you should be expecting much faster growth for the new thing. But still, that might mean like much faster on an absolute basis, like going from 100 users to 120 in a month might be a huge win, but means nothing from a revenue standpoint to the business. And so it gets really...
It's effort versus reward too. I think there's this other combination of like effort versus reward, and then also like the strategic impact that it's going to have for your organization, right? There's like another element of that. Like, there's certain investments that you're going to make that, you know, you've got to sort of be able to cross the organizational chasm on. So like, you're driving sort of like an organizational shift to get there. And there's going to be times in that period that it's going to take a little bit longer. And there's going to be gut checks where you're like, ooh, all right, are we making the right move here? But those are some of the most important times to sort of make sure you come back to the numbers, think through the strategic impact, look at the market landscape and the research that you've done, and stay focused and committed to push forward. I have a few different examples of that. In my career, which fortunately, most paid off quite well. And then there was one that was, we did have to make a pivot on, probably a little bit later than we wanted to. But generally speaking, it was within the context of other things that were performing quite well.
Was it hard to? Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, Sylvie. Hit it.
No, please. Sylvie, please speak up. Come on, let's go.
No, I want to hear what you were going to ask.
I want to really hear what Sylvia is going to ask now.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, like, it sounds really hard to motivate people through that kind of tension. Like, how do you keep them motivated?
Yeah. The why, right? Kind of take yourself out of it. The why, you got to tie it to the mission of the organization, the strategic objectives, what it means for the organization, and why they're valued in that initiative as well. That kind of can get people through the trough that you might be in a strategic initiative, because there's always going to be a trough. There's like, whenever you're doing something hard, there's always going to be a period of time where you're like, oh my gosh, like, this is insanely hard. Is this worth doing? And also, like, am I good enough? Am I doing the right thing? Right. And it takes courage of leadership, but it also takes a really good understanding of the why and being able to communicate that really effectively.
That was a sufficient answer.
Yeah. Well, it's a great answer. And it's back to what we're talking about before, repeating yourself. It's like, you know, sometimes you don't know. It's hard to even know the benefit you're getting of repeating the same thing over and over, because it's like in that moment, like Jonathan's talking about, it's like, oh yeah, I can see how this connects. And, you know, let's say the number went from 80 to 110, which on an absolute basis, you're trying to get, let's say, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of something. You're like, oh shit, like this is, we're nowhere close. But actually, that's a ton of growth if it was over a month. And, if you're talking about the why, I think it matters. And, like, you know, another thing I've seen happen is when you meet a customer in person, that's the other thing that can get people through it. But in B2B businesses, sometimes the absolute numbers are small. And so it's funny because, like, if you meet a customer in person, you see how emphatic they are about how much of an impact it's going to have. I mean, this just happened last week. I met a customer at an event, and one of our sales reps was there. And after, he's like, I mean, they have all the problems that were solved, like, and they're so excited to solve the problems. Like, it's crazy. And it's so motivating to see this person in person, describe the issue, describe the impact. And the wild thing for me in that case was like, this is on our sales team, great sales rep. He talks to customers every day. It's just virtual, right? And so there was a difference of like sitting down too, and seeing another human being and hearing about the impact it's going to have in their life. And I think it's just really easy to miss that data sometimes when you're trying to make these calls.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's one of the reasons why I love events so much. I don't know. Yeah. Like, thinking back about Inbound, right? Like, I was buzzing that whole time. I'm technically not the biggest extrovert in the world. Like, I'm not an introvert either, but like, after Inbound, like, I slept for 3 days and like, like stayed in my house by myself, right? Like, I needed to like completely decompress.
Yeah.
But I love seeing the energy. I love seeing the enthusiasm. One of the things about Inbound is it's like, it's a microcosm of your industry. And there's other events like that in every industry where it's like with 3 days, you have a small percentage, but still like the population in which is consuming the goods and like experiencing the benefits of an ecosystem.
Yeah.
You've got all the major players in the ecosystem likely there. There's all of these sessions taking place. There's all of this content. There's all of these brand messages. There's people talking to each other and learning and like experiencing something, right? And I just find that so fascinating. It's like a mix between market research, connecting with customers, but also like feeling this energy. I saw somebody going for a run in the t-shirts that we were giving away at the booth. I was like, oh my gosh, like I want that to happen every single day of the year and someone to feel really good and like, and it said grow on the front of it, right? And it was like, I want someone to feel like every time they touch our brand, they've got the energy of growth. They could experience the good that comes with growth, right? Like, that's amazing. How can we make that happen every single day of the year? And I don't know, it's that energy, it's that feeling, it's understanding that essence and then bringing that into the digital atmosphere, right?
And like, remembering, as you're saying, like, I trying to associate that feeling with the number, right? It's like, yeah. That's because I think that's if you don't go to the events and you don't do this stuff in person, you don't get to remember that there's human beings behind all of this that are like actually impacted. So I love that.
I actually had one person recently, and it was a new customer of ours. And I was asking them, I was like, are you cool if I just like find one of your customers in a local city and just like go and sit there for a few hours? Like, I just want to see. I just want to see it. Maybe like ask some random questions, right? I remember being down in Australia. It was when I was running marketing for an employee engagement platform. Essentially, the way that it was consumed was through employees, and they had an app on their phone. And Krispy Kreme was a large customer of ours. So I went to their local Krispy Kreme in Sydney, Australia at the airport. And I was just like, hey, like, how's it going? I was like, do you know about the CRISPR? The CRISPR was the name of their app. Yeah. And the person was like, oh my gosh, yeah, of course I know the CRISPR. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, I run marketing for that organization. Like, how do you like the CRISPR? And she's like, let me tell you. And she told me about like how much money it saves her family at the holidays and all this jazz. She ended up giving me a bunch of free donuts. And like, that was, I had that story, like that emotion.
Yeah.
That went back into activities that we were then trying to bring to other people. And I think getting in front of not only the customers, but the people who are experiencing your products too, like that's another way that sort of grounds you and helps you make some of those decisions and stay focused to a certain extent.
I mean, I love that. And I also love how it like bookends the very beginning of this conversation. And, you know, it's like amazing, right? It's like, it's donuts, it's not bagels. It's the story that's important, the passion, like it's amazing. All right, Jonathan, we're going to go into the rapid fire section. So,
oh boy, here we go.
I'm going to ask you some quick questions, quick answers. Are you ready to rock?
Let's do this.
All right. Up first, what is the best advice that someone has ever given you?
Preparation is everything.
Perfect.
Is that the Boy Scouts? Like, be prepared? Is that them?
No. I didn't do Boy Scouts, but we buy our Christmas tree from the Boy Scouts every year in our local town. It's my father. From a very early age, he was just like drilled it in my head. Like, preparation is everything. Like, a little bit of preparation goes a long way.
It really does.
That's awesome. If you could trade places with anyone for a day, who would it be and why?
Michael Jordan is prime.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I like that. That is good.
Okay. Name something outside of work that you're very good at.
At the moment, skiing.
Skiing.
I am not.
Ripping blades? What are you doing?
I got pretty good last year. I skied a lot last year. And I get to ski with my son, which is special. But yeah, I like to push myself on the mountain and be safe at the same time.
There you go. Speaking of pushing yourself, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, it's so bad. It's awful.
You got
New York,
it.
New York.
That's a good answer to that one. That's fantastic. And final rapid fire question. You're not going to believe this one's so hard hitting. What's your favorite meal of the day? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack?
Oh, so little fun fact, among my family, I am the chairman and CEO of the Breakfast Club. I'm a massive breakfast fan. I wake up, the first thing I must do is eat breakfast. Yeah, live for breakfast.
Most important meal of the day.
It's a gift. Yeah.
Jonathan, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people connect with you to learn more?
Yeah, LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so connect with me on LinkedIn. And also, if you go to newbreedmarketing.com, you could fill out a contact us, drop my name in there, but LinkedIn's the best way to find me. I'm always on there. So
awesome. Thanks so much, Jonathan. We'll be back right after the break.
It's me again,
Frank the Ad Guy.
And this month's podcast shout out goes out to Business Made Simple. Hosted by Donald Miller, CEO of Storybrand, this show serves up the practical and tactical skills you need to build a business. From launch to scale and everything in between, Business Made Simple is all about taking out the guesswork and helping you create a plan. Check it out at HubSpot.com/podcast network or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now, back to Talking Too Loud.
Man, that guy loves bagels.
And donuts.
And donuts.
But really bagels.
It's like he listened to the episode about bagels with
that
you.
That was weird. Wasn't that weird?
I mean, you're kindred Montreal bagels, like spirits.
Yes. And that I really loved how that whole bagel story kind of dovetailed into what he thinks about on a day-to-day basis and like how all these elements of a company have to really work together. So like the quality of the bagels after it changed ownership, the same, just as good. But the experience of being in the bagel shop, subpar. And so you might have a great product, but if your brand can't deliver on the experience, you in trouble.
Yeah, you can only take it so far. And I know, why is it that it's so easy to think about this with like small businesses and food? There's something about it.
I know, like, you're right. You're so right. It like makes total sense when you're like thinking about the bagel shop.
Yeah, it's harder with like software to believe that the brand matters. It matters enormously. The experience matters enormously. Why do you think people turn this off? They don't turn it off. I mean, the service is part of the product, right? So it's like, that's really what we're saying is like, it's if you don't admit that or realize that, then you're missing the whole picture. You're missing the whole opportunity. And I think sometimes the other thing is true too, is you have an okay product, incredible service, and people go for it all day because they just like feel like they're taken care of.
That's really true. And the question you posed is just, it is really interesting. People just don't think about B2B in the same way. I don't know that we've totally cracked why on the show.
No, I mean, we've talked about it before. We've talked about positioning. We've talked about the importance of distribution. And I think it's like enterprise B2B, often you're dealing with like the list of must-haves to purchase, right? So like, it's like to cover your butt, you need to have all of these things. And so then it feels like the brand doesn't matter because it's whoever satisfies the RFP should win the deal. But the truth is like the way people are buying has changed. You know, freemium is here. I don't think it's going to disappear. People try products. The user experience matters before they get adopted, you know, writ large. And that's been a major trend driven by a lot of the other changes we're talking about, which is like, hey, if it's harder to get organic to work, if it's more expensive to stand out, like if the market's more mature, so companies with bigger pockets are going to be the ones who get most of the attention. You have to have a product that's so good and so easy to use that people actually share it with each other because they like each other. They want to help each other out. And that changes everything because the first touch is like from someone on your team who just happened to have like a discrete problem. So yeah, it's easy to think brand doesn't matter in B2B, but it really does.
It really does. And yeah.
Yeah.
And to Jonathan's point, like if you're not getting in front of the customer to understand what is and isn't working, then you're just going to be so far behind the pack. Like
we've talked about that a fair amount on here, and there's a reason, right? Is that it is, you know, if you hear something enough in enough different ways from enough people who have figured it out themselves, probably that thing, there's some truth in it. And so I think that's why it's so easy. It's also, I think, you know what it is? It's so easy to think you're looking at customer data and you're not. Because anyone with any scale, especially online, the numbers do get big. Thousands of signups a month, tens of thousands of times, millions of users. And so everything shifts towards, well, I have the data to make the decisions for me because I look at this graph, graph go up, good, graph go down, bad. You know, it's very, very much looks like that.
That was nice Tarzan data analysis.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But when in the details, like if you were to actually talk to every one of those customers, you get very different information out of that.
Yeah. Like, or it's like you sort of see what you want to see, or you see this snapshot. You see the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
And you put everything onto that without like actually going deeper. So,
and like revenue, which is a thing that's very easy to measure, is a lagging indicator.
Meaning,
like, say, it's the last thing you get. You don't start with revenue and then build a relationship. You're trying to build a relationship. You're trying to stand out, trying to get, you know, if you're a freemium, you're trying to get the person to use the product and then adopt it and then share it. By the time they're paying, they've been hopefully getting value for a while from content, from your site, from seeing you at events, from using the product. So someone might pay today, but they started getting value 6 months or a year ago. Right. That makes it really confusing because, like, you see the number going up, and it's easy to think it's going up because of something you did this month, which sometimes is true. But sometimes,
yeah,
a lot of the time, it's all the other stuff you were doing earlier. And so it's figuring that out is really tough. And I think that's where this, like, simple thing of, like, you need to look at, like, what are the right long-term things that I should always be doing and improving? And how do I make sure that enough effort is on those things? And yes, you can do some you should be doing short-term stuff as well. But if you don't do the right long-term stuff, it's just very hard to grow into being something meaningful, I think.
Well, hats off to Jonathan, who inspired basically a second interview in our outro.
Yes.
We're still going.
We're still going.
But we're going to stop.
Okay. Well, that is it. Thank you so much for joining us here today, listening, watching the show. We love your feedback as always, so please shoot us over your feedback if you got it, ttlpod@wisty.com, or you can rate and review the show wherever you listen to it. That helps get the word out there. It helps us bring more people on. It helps us get even more engaging guests for you all. Speaking of guests, if you have someone that you think we should interview and we'll have on the show, hit us up. Tell us. We love that. That's been happening more and more. It's been really great. And if you want to connect with Sylvia or I, we are both on LinkedIn, spending a lot of time there these days. So find us, say hello, comment, join the conversation. And I think, is that it, Sylvie? Or am I missing something?
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote. So until next time, everybody, take it easy. See you soon.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.